Bet365 sponsors our podcast and they feature over 300,000 sporting events on their betting app. It's got everything you need to bet on sport. Bet365 are offering a wide range of markets, including first, last, or anytime goal scorers. With over 45 million members, it's the world's favourite online betting company. With Bet365 Bet Builder, you can combine match results, players to score, number of goals, and more to create your own personalised bet. And if you can't watch the games live, with Bet365's Match Live feature, you can follow every moment through live graphics and text. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sports betting company. The app can be downloaded from the Google Play and the Apple App Store. Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. Hello everybody and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. My name is, of course, Taylor Payne and I'm joined here today by Chris Woff and Mr. George Colgan. Coming up on the show, we're going to be answering your questions on all things Newcastle. We're going to be looking at the team performances, Steve Bruce's performance, also Mike Ashley's ownership and lots of other things probably breakfast related, I would imagine. But before we get into that, what about that result against Spurs in that last 10 seconds and the Callum Wilson penalty in the 97th minute? What the hell was going on there?
Well, I mean, I have to say that... hello, everyone. I'll have to say that I'm still absolutely laughing my cock off at the last 2 seconds of the match, and I'm still weeping salty tears of despair at the previous 90 minutes. Oh, my God. I don't know. I mean... hilarious. I mean, let's not forget the comedy because it was really, really, really funny. Does it quite make up for the shit that went before it? No, I'm afraid it doesn't.
No. Chris, what do you think? Are your sides still splitting like George's?
Hello, everyone. Yes, I mean, it was the brilliant moment, obviously, everyone watched when Mourinho stormed down the tunnel is always a brilliant moment, and I'm sure there was many Spurs fans across the country and the world who did exactly likewise and probably just turned the TV off at that moment and walked out because it was, that was Newcastle United's get-out-of-jail-free card, which they've used many, many times over the last year.
We can't have many left now.
Well, I mean, I'm just wondering if they've got like a pass which just never ends. It just seems that it keeps coming back.
That seems to be the case. Well, now we've had a little chuckle, let's crack on with the questions. We've had lots sent in by the listeners. Sorry if we don't get through to your questions, but we've got lots to cover. They've been sent in via the hashtag Pod on the Tyne, which is what we're going to use for future reference. And there's lots and lots to get through, so we're going to crack straight on with the question that is undoubtedly on everybody's lips at the moment. This is the thing that we've been asked the most about. And the question comes from Craig Thompson. And it is Goal the best ever football film, or is Goal 2? Let's please direct that question at George. George, would you like to answer that question?
I'm a serious journalist. Right, well, no one took that seriously. I haven't seen it. I've admitted to this. I haven't seen either of them. I haven't seen any of them. My favourite football film is Gregory's Girl.
If you're going to do that, then you have to include Kez as well, don't you?
Yeah, that's
quite
very
a bit
good.
Of football in Kez.
Yeah, that's good.
I like Jimmy Grimble.
I should have looked at these questions. You should have shown me these questions before and I might have an answer. I haven't seen Goal. I'm sorry to disrespect the sacred memory of Santiago Munez, but I've never seen it.
I think we need to do a podcast special on the Goal series.
Chris and I are going to write about it. We're going to write about it. So
are you going to watch it all beforehand?
Yes, I'll have to do that.
Good. Okay.
I apologise.
No problem. Now we've got that out of the way, let's crack on. Keegan Carr has asked, does the fact that we are collecting points cancel out the fact of how bad we are playing? Chris, what do we reckon?
I wouldn't say it cancels it out, but if we get to this weekend and Newcastle were to beat Burnley, which is not beyond the realms of possibility, and if they were to get through to the quarterfinals of the Carabao Cup, then I think if you'd given the points tally that Newcastle would have, probably be in the top 8 maybe by then, and being the last 8 of the League Cup by the first international break, I think most people would have taken it. I think the issue is that we feel, as we did at large parts of last season, that the way they're playing is not sustainable. They've sustained it so far, but I do think that at some point we do need to see progress.
That exactly was what happened last season. Points cancelled out performances, and they got to where they were on the table. That was a huge relief to all of us, and we got to the end of the season with, you know, breathing out in relief, but thinking that it was in no way, you know, possible that they could carry on doing that. You would think that it isn't sustainable in the long run, but you know, they're still very much a work in progress.
I mean, it definitely feels like we're getting away with it a little bit at the moment, doesn't it? I mean, we came up against a West Ham team who weren't firing. They just weren't up for it that day, and we beat them 2-0, although they did have chances and they hit the bar and all sorts of stuff. And then, you know, we play Morecambe. We get absolutely stuffed off Brighton. We play Morecambe and we have a nice 7-0 win. And then the Spurs game, we just didn't even look like attempting to be involved in the game. It was so passive. That's the thing that's annoying me at the minute. That's what I find so frustrating about Newcastle, is how passive they are.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's not been impressive. Part of me thinks that the way they played against Spurs a couple of seasons ago, when that was happening, even last season to a certain extent, you could sort of forgive it because the crowd would be in the stadium and every tackle would get a big cheer and every clearance would get a cheer, and then every break, you know, there would be a roar behind. And that's not how any of us dream of Newcastle playing. But for that sort of short term, certainly first couple of years after coming back into the Premier League, you think, okay, well, it's about staying up, it's about stabilising, I can see what's happening and we can kind of get behind it as a short-term philosophy.
Okay, so Tom Coates has asked, hi all, hi Tom, given the number of central midfield academy graduates in the squad, could you pick one of Sean Longstaff, Matty Longstaff and Dan Barlaser, Chris, or Barlaser?
I think it's Barlaser.
Barlaser, to sell one, loan one and one to keep. So out of Matty Longstaff, Sean Longstaff and Dan Barlaser, sell one, loan one and one to keep, what would we go with?
That's like the snog, shag, marry question, isn't it? I mean, it's not exactly like it, but
except totally different.
except totally different. It's a bit like that, Tom. I'm definitely not going to answer that.
I would definitely say the one to loan would be Matty Longstaff, because I think he needs game time. I think that would be to his benefit, because yeah, I don't think he's going to play that much this season. He's injured at the minute. I know a lot of people are asking where he is, but he has got a bit of a thigh injury. I think I'll have to go, although I like him, I would like him to have done well. I just think Dan Barlaser probably has had his time, so I'd sell him and then keep Sean Longstaff, because he's probably the closest to being a first-team player at the minute. I suppose he is a first-team player, but
yes, yeah,
hasn't necessarily shown that over the last few months. But
yeah, I think we know what Sean Longstaff's capable of, though, don't we? And we have seen him do it. And I think I agree with you when you're saying about Matt, he does need games. Yeah, I would probably have to agree with Chris there. What about you, George? Any difference on that?
Yeah, I don't see any point in disagreeing.
Okay, good. That's not like you. following on for that, in a similar sort of vein, why do we lack creativity in the midfield? Sorry, I've missed the name off on this one, but not to worry. We'll thank you, whoever it is who sent this one in. Why do we lack creativity in the midfield? Does Hayden offer anything creatively, or is he overrated like Jonjo, who is not consistent?
I
think what he's saying is that Jonjo is... I know.
Anonymous person.
That's why you've left the name off, so George doesn't abuse them.
Have George turn up at their house. George, Hayden, what's he offering at the moment?
Well, he isn't offering creativity. I mean, that's for definite, but that's not his job.
Not as a right centre-back.
And certainly not as a right centre-back. And what he does offer is, if he's playing alongside Shelvey, then he's the one that does Shelvey's running for him. If you look at Spurs and you look at Brighton, and Shelvey played really badly, he is arguably Newcastle's most talented player. If that's what you want to, if that's how you rate it in terms of being able to pass the ball and being able to pass the ball long. But you know, we've had our own debates about Shelvey and Shelvey's worth. When he's off form, he is a liability. I'll repeat that statement that I've previously said before, and then taken back myself, because I was proved to be an idiot. But when he's not, when the team don't play well and he doesn't play well, he gives away possession far too much. But I don't think it's fair to say he's not creative. I mean, I think that's what he is. It's just that when it doesn't work, it looks awful. And Hayden is the man alongside him who disrupts play, picks up possession, gives the ball simply. I don't think Hayden's overrated. I think he's a really good player at what he does. But asking him to storm through midfield and do something is asking the wrong question.
I'd agree with George. I think the issue I've got with Newcastle's midfield I mean, Bruce, I know you would like a sort of box-to-box type, as he calls them. I know you'd like a bit more power and legs in there. But I think part of the issue, and we saw this at Spurs, and I know these players can sometimes be criticised, but Newcastle don't have someone who, like a metronomic sort of passer, someone who just gets the ball, passes it on to someone else, and they keep possession. Newcastle just give the ball away all the time. And so I think in those sorts of games, that's the type of player that they lack. They lack someone in midfield who will have the most touches of the ball, will make the most passes, and they may not be the most incisive ones, but it allows them to get on the ball and keep possession. That's what I think they really do lack in there.
Yeah, just somebody who can recycle it a bit and take the pressure off us. But the main problem I have with Shelvey is just how inconsistent he is. There'll be a week when he'll be spraying 40, 30-yard balls around and he looks absolutely unplayable. He finds space, he's got vision, and he's picking players out. And then there's weeks when he just doesn't look arsed even slightly. I thought against Spurs, towards the last sort of 20 minutes of the game, I know he was getting tired and stuff, but I actually made a point of watching him for a good 5 minutes, and there was a point when Spurs were attacking around our box, and he literally stood still for about 5 minutes. He didn't move. And I just thought, that's not good. You can't be carrying players like that. You know what I mean? And I get we're 3-0 down and I get you tired and all that sort of stuff, but it's just not good enough, is it?
No, and there aren't really alternatives. That's the problem at the moment. I mean, I think we actually thought there were a few options there at the start of the season, perhaps. But, you know, Sean Longstaff has come in and played in the cup games and, you know, has just looked way off it. Matty Longstaff is further down the natural pecking order and isn't fit. And once you kind of get beyond that, there isn't really a lot of choice. It would be good to have some variation. I guess it's a position Hendrick could play in. Yeah. You know, he might be able to drive the team a bit more, but certainly not in terms of creativity. You're looking at elsewhere for creativity, really. If you've got pace around it with Saint-Maximin, with Fraser, with Almiron, then, you know, perhaps you do need a more solid base in the middle of midfield. But as of yet, we have not seen the balance, have we?
We haven't seen the balance, no. Let's move on to the next question. Sean Saunders, will watching Newcastle United ever be fun again? George, what do we think?
Well, I mean, that's a very flawed question, Sean, because you're presupposing that watching Newcastle has ever been fun. And I suppose it must have been at some point in my life. It's just I can't remember it. I do think it will be at some point, but with what we've seen so far this season, it hasn't quite been the evolution that we were hoping for. There is still time. I suppose we have to remember that the new players haven't been here very long. We still haven't seen Fraser properly embedded into the league team. Saint-Maximin has been out. So I still have a bit of hope that this team can play a bit better, but... Well, probably no is the answer. I mean, yes. Yes, yes, but no. No, but yes.
Chris, fun? That the kind of thing you're into? Or just too much energy needed for that? Yeah. What do you think about that, though, Chris? Do you think Newcastle could ever be fun? Do you think this team, this setup could ever be fun to watch?
Yeah. Do I think that watching Newcastle as a whole is ever going to be fun? No.
Chris shaking up the neighbourhood there with his go-to attitude and upbeat tone of voice.
I think there could be a fun team in there, you know. I genuinely think that front, if we get that midfield, attacking midfield three of Fraser, Almiron and Saint-Maximin all firing, all fit, with Callum Wilson in front of them and a solid midfield and with Jamal Lewis flying down one side and Mankio on the other side, I think that could be a fun team to watch, you know. It's a lot of ifs, but it feels like that to me seems like the right team, the right 11 to play, and it would be attacking. And I mean, I watched loads of games this weekend. I didn't have an awful lot to do over the weekend, so I watched a lot of football. And even the teams in the Premier League who you would class as not being brilliant teams, they all had a bit of attacking intent about them. And it didn't matter who they were playing. They got the ball down. They tried to get it forward. The strikers were running the channels. The midfield players were joining in the attacks. I mean, Sheffield United and Leeds, did you watch that game? It was only 1-0. It was unbelievable. Every single attack, there was about 8 players in the box for both teams. And I just watched our game and I thought, why are we not trying to play higher up the pitch? Why do we have to be so passive all the time? And it just gets frustrating, doesn't it?
Bruce has talked about that today in his presser ahead of the Newport game. And he does, you know, he does want to transition to a different style. He wants to get to the point where they're comfortable playing 4 at the back. although he has also said that that probably won't be the case against the bigger teams. So perhaps we've got more of that to sort of look forward to against the sort of top four, top five, top six teams.
It against Brighton as well, George. So
I know, I agree. Albeit, I don't think that was, sort of intentional. I think it was very intentional to sit back, at Spurs and kind of soak up pressure and try and hit them on the counter. I don't think that was particularly the tactic against Brighton, but that's how it ended up because Brighton just had the ball and Newcastle were terrible on the ball. I think when you go through those players. And that team, it still sounds to me like a counter-attacking team. I mean, I just think that that's how it feels because it feels like this pace. We've said this a few times now. That's how Wilson and Fraser in particular played at Bournemouth towards the end. And St. Maximin can get the ball up the pitch. All those, you know, Almiron, he needs space. They need space to run into. And so I still think it's set up as a team that's not going to be particularly comfortable on the ball. Or having possession and trying to get through teams who are hanging back. I just don't think that's going to be easy for this Newcastle team. They should be better. They should be better on the break, and there should be more cohesion. There just hasn't been any cohesion so far, and it's very difficult to sort of if you bounce through the three league games so far. Look at West Ham, okay, decent performance, but. It has Andy Carroll up front. That's not going to last for very long. You know, that's not going to last for very long as an idea. And then the same team against Brighton, and it felt disastrous. It felt disastrous again for different reasons against Spurs, albeit with a frigging hilarious last minute. I mean, I think it's important that we collectively just laugh our heads off at what happened.
Acknowledge that.
Yeah. Steve Bruce is being asked lots of questions about this, about what he's trying to do, about style, about formations. There isn't really an easy answer to it because it feels like it's been all over the place.
I mean, just to carry on with that, Ryan Lucas asked, I would like a deep dive into our tactics. We might not be the right people to do that, but under Rafa, we had a shape, but still not an awful lot of threat going forward at first. But then later on, obviously, with Rondon and Almiron and Perez for that last half season, we had more threat going forward. There's been little to no movement for at least the last 5 years. I think he's saying there's a lack of movement in the top half of the pitch. What do we think on that?
Well, I mean, in terms of a deep dive into tactics, hopefully at some point we're going to do a podcast looking at this. And so I think spending a lot of time on that now is probably not a good idea. What I would say is that what I've thought over the last few months is when people criticise playing three-man solid defence, five-man backline, whatever you want to call it, that in itself is not necessarily negative. I think it's the style and the way that you do actually put that into play. And I think that's where... I mean, I wasn't in Bruce's press conference today, so I can't really comment exactly on what he said. I don't know the context behind it. George was. But when I've seen his sort of comments about it's got nothing to do with style, well, then the question has to be, what has it got to do with? And why are they so passive? Why are they playing in such a way? What are the instructions? And that's where I've got a little bit of a problem with the minute, because under Benitez, at least for a period, it did look like they could transition from defensive to attack, whereas they're really struggling to do that with any sort of cohesion at the minute.
I think the point he was making when he says that, when it hasn't got anything to do with style, what he's trying to say is it's got more to do with inconsistency. So you're going from one week where it worked, where there was, you know, nobody was particularly questioning the tactics after West Ham. The same team, the same formation plays against Brighton. Everybody questioned the formation and tactics because it was so bad. I think what he's saying there is that it's that inconsistency in performance that is the problem. So I do understand what he means by that. It's just that if you look at kind of all three games sort of in isolation, two of those games have been really, really poor with different formations and no kind of real semblance of, you don't come away from that thinking, oh, well, I could see what he was trying to do there, but it just hasn't worked. So I think he's never going to be the kind of manager who blinds us with science. He's not that kind of fella. He's not a kind of clipboard manager. He's not that kind of person in the way he speaks and thinks. He is perfectly happy and willing and capable of switching formations because he did it several times last season, often out of necessity. He's done the same thing already so far this season, starting with 4-4-2, moving to five at the back, three at the back at Spurs, and then changing things in games. He'll do it. It's just he won't blind us with the science of it. The point he's trying to make is that Newcastle aren't consistent. And he does have a point. Newcastle are a mid-table team who aren't good enough to be good. And that is that is a fact.
Yeah. Local Hero 9 has asked if you, Chris Woff, could make one realistic signing for Newcastle before the window closes, who would it be?
Well, seeing as Frank Lampard seems to have suggested that Ruben Loftus-Cheek may be available for loan, I think he would be a good player Newcastle could bring in terms of when we're talking about that additional creativity, that sort of link player Newcastle maybe lack. I think that Ruben Loftus-Cheek could be a good potential loan signing.
I would have to agree, but I don't think you're allowed by Premier League rules to have that much handsome in one team. If we look at Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Callum Wilson, I think that's just too much handsome. You're not allowed that much. What about you, George? One player?
No.
Okay, good.
No, I think that's a good answer. I mean, I don't think one player solves anything. I hope that the club used the loan system and use it wisely. There is still obviously a big issue with getting people out, and that has to happen. There are good loan options around the place. They just need to kind of use them carefully. I still want backup up front. I think as you said, Taylor, when you look at the three or four players who could play in attacking positions, they all look good, but they also need to be challenged. Yeah. They need to be challenged for their place. Jolinton is going to obviously still be around the place. We know that. Personally, I'm just worried. If you look at the numbers of chances created, I mean, it is astonishing, really, that there have been three games so far and only three shots on target.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
And them being three goals as well. You know, it's incredible. And that is unsustainable.
Ladies and gentlemen, Harry's sponsors, Pod on the Tyne. As a listener to the podcast, you can start shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. Support our podcast and get your set delivered to you, including a razor handle, 5 blade cartridge, foaming shave gel and travel blade cover. And going to harrys.com, Pod on the Tyne, right now, we'll get you that trial pack. That's harrys.com/Pod on the Tyne. How come I have to read these all the time? Why can't we get George to do one of these sometime? George, you're the one who's used these Harry's razors.
My cheeks have never been smoother. I can do that. Wonderful. If you want me to do that, I'll just clip that. Here we go. Harry's razors. My cheeks have never been smoother.
I would just like to give an honourable mention to Jolinton and his part in the lead-up to the free kick, which led to the penalty, and his spearing-style WWE move on Pierre-Emile Højbjerg? Chris, how do you pronounce that?
I think it's Højbjerg.
Højbjerg, yes. So that move by Jolinton, which I've not seen that move done very often in the Premier League, of essentially running towards and then throwing yourself at a defender in order to get a free kick. That was an interesting one, wasn't it?
It almost looked like he was playing rugby and he was trying to clear out a ruck. It was quite... It won the free kick. And I actually thought he did. I thought he was... And don't get me wrong, this has come from a fairly low base. But I do think he played well on Sunday compared to many of his outfield teammates. I thought he held the ball reasonably well. I thought he may try and make ground down that left wing. And so I still don't think that he's a natural left winger by any stretch. But I do think that we saw sort of green shoots, maybe.
I think the thing is, if he had cost £8 to £10 million and he was playing as a coming off the bench or a squad player to play in those positions, you probably wouldn't be too bothered, would you? But I think it's that price tag which has got him every time, isn't it?
I mean, he worked hard at Spurs and, you know, that kind of thing has been questioned, his attitude and things like that. I mean, I suppose if we're going to look at context and look at mitigation, you have to say that, we've seen with how isolated Callum Wilson has been, particularly in that game, that it's not just all about Jolinton, is it? I mean, I'm not trying to say that he's free of kind of culpability. Maybe that's a harsh word, bearing in mind he just doesn't look equipped to do that role that we saw him in so many times last season. But it's not just, I mean, he doesn't have the instinct of Callum Wilson. However, we saw that if you don't get the ball to the striker in a useful position, he can't do anything with it. So there is a bit of mitigation for Jolinton there, I would guess. And yeah, It was not a miraculous performance by any stretch of the imagination, but he did stick at it, he did work hard, and certainly in terms of those things, he was a cut above quite a few of his teammates.
Let's move on a little bit here. We've done a lot of stuff on the team and sort of tactics and setup and all that sort of stuff, and thank you for all the questions about that. There was loads of them to get through. We're going to move on and talk about some other stuff now. Steve Bruce, specifically, Adam M has asked, are Steve Bruce's Newcastle the luckiest shit team of all time? I mean, luck played a massive part in some of the results that we got last season, didn't it? And it kind of looks as though that's going to carry over into this season, judging by what we've had so far, George.
Yeah, I mean, that was astonishing against Spurs, wasn't it? I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. To repeat, it was also fucking hilarious. And it did, yeah. It was very reminiscent of Everton away, where I was lucky enough to be in the away end for, and, you know, Newcastle were 2-0 down and then get two goals in the 90 minute plus through Lejeune, and it was just hilarious. But they were outclassed in every department on Sunday, aside from the goalkeeping department.
Darlow was fabulous, wasn't he? He was great, yeah, Carl Darlow.
Yeah, he played really well. And Spurs should have been out of sight. And the thing is, you can laugh at that decision as a one-off. If you're talking about the bigger picture, it is ridiculous that, you know, that can be a penalty. And you tend to think that as things stand, that will come back to bite Newcastle at some point. And fair play to Steve Bruce, he's absolutely admitted all of this and held his hands up, because if you don't get players in the box enough, you are not going to benefit from handball decisions in the box over a long term basis. And other teams will, and other teams will get handballs against Newcastle. So I would have loved to have been in the away end, or to see the away end full. You have that kind of fabulous pantomime of Mourinho walking straight down the tunnel. It's great. I love all that. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. It's funny. And my first reaction was just to laugh, because it was so stupid and so ridiculous. But the 90 minutes before that were awful to watch. Harrowing. Anger making. I can't really sort of disagree with that question at all. Not good enough and very lucky. Yeah, things ran for them so much last season. You know, we've said that can't happen two seasons in a row, and it can't. I mean, so that happened on Sunday,
absolutely,
but it can't happen two seasons in a row, and it won't.
Just to address this handball thing, I mean, they've brought us in line with the other major leagues in Europe and how the handball law is interpreted and enforced.
I mean, speaking to just people in and around football over the last few days, that it seems almost universal that the vast majority of people don't agree with the way that it's going. They recognise that it's the interpretation of the law. I mean, I saw quite an interesting tweet earlier today, and I think it was from Alex Hurst, but I'm not sure, it might be for someone else, but he was saying about VAR and with this, is it's not the law is an issue, but also was it clear and obvious on, if you've got to look at it, yeah, several, I mean, how long did the decision take on Sunday? It was about 3 or 4 minutes, and then the referee, yeah, went across and looked. That's where I've got the problem with these sorts of things as well, is if it becomes so minute that we're just checking over and over and over again, that's not a clear and obvious error. It's not something... and so, yeah, I mean, there's going to be endless debate about this, and there's talk that this morning in some of the newspapers that it's going to be watered down and they're not going to be as stringent with it, which I think would probably be to everyone's benefit, because otherwise I do agree with those people who say that you're probably going to see some players almost deliberately aim for the arm of defenders if they're getting, yeah, close and in the box.
I was trying to think back to when we've actually had to talk about VAR on this podcast, and in the kind of over a year since we've started doing this, I could only think of one instance where VAR has actually been involved with Newcastle. I mean, there's probably more with regards to red cards and offsides and stuff like that, but one where it was a big decision was the Sheffield United goal, with the John Joe Shelby goal. And I just remember thinking, everyone seems to be talking about VAR every week, and we never seem to mention it on here. And is that, I don't know why that is. Is that just because Newcastle don't attack enough to actually have any VAR decisions go our way? I don't know what it is.
For the first FA Cup game of last season, which was at Rochdale, it was floated as an idea that because it was going to be Premier League teams going to grounds without VAR, and Newcastle, yeah, were at one of those grounds, could we do what's it like not having VAR? And I basically argued back and I said, well, I wasn't at the Sheffield United game. George was there. And basically, as you say, there wasn't really a VAR incident. So it's like, I'm going to be arguing about something where Newcastle haven't really been on the positive or negative receiving end of this beyond that one decision. So it's not really been
strange,
a big talking point for us.
It's strange. It's such a polarising topic in football at the minute, VAR, and how the rules are implemented. And we just sails over our heads. We don't really care. It's mad. Wouldn't it be great if every clothing store you shopped at had only your size, the styles you liked, and everything at the price you want? Well, Stitch Fix is a company focused on doing just that. It's an online personal styling company that makes getting the clothes you love simple. It's a completely different way to shop, and it's all about you. I don't know about you, lads, but my style in the last few years has gone to a 38-year-old dad who has given up on life and essentially just buys whatever's nearest. I don't know about you, George. Are you a stylish man, George? I think you are quite a stylish man, aren't you?
Oh, incredibly stylish, yeah.
Sartorially he's become elegant. My personal shopper as well.
Well, it's true, I have actually. Become
I have to reject George to join Stitch Fix, but I am willing to do that. George has given me a coat which he ordered, which was too small for him, and then as I took it off him, he said, oh, so now at least you have something which is stylish, which I was a little bit offended by, but at the same time, my sister would probably agree with him, so...
Well, anyone with eyes would agree with me.
Chris, you do dress like a 1970s Freemason, so, you know, we'll...
That's the look I'm going for.
That's good. Okay, well, you've definitely got it, mate. Well done. To get started, go to stitchfix.co.uk/athletic to set up your profile, and they'll deliver great looks personalised just for you. You pay a £10 styling fee for each fix, which is credited towards anything you keep. Schedule at any time with no subscription. Deliveries and returns are completely free and easy, so you can always send back the items that aren't right for you. Chris, has George given you an option to send back that jacket if it's no good?
No, he just used a lot of expletives when I said that. I'm not taking it away.
Good stuff. Get started with Stitch Fix today by going to stitchfix.co.uk/athletic. Right, we're going to move on here. Joe Grant has asked, how bad do you think things would need to get for Steve Bruce to go? Obviously, it's very early, and one loss, one win and a draw doesn't seem to be an awful start, but the quality of football has been dreadful. Does that matter at all, or is it all about just staying in the league? George, what do we reckon?
Well, did you see Mike Ashley clapping the team off at Spurs?
We did. I think that's your answer, isn't it?
So... Yes, it okay, fine. So if I say 3 games is way too early, people will then point back to the run this calendar year. That's fair enough. I don't think that's something the club will particularly take much notice of, bearing in mind Bruce has had a pivotal role in who they've brought in this season. They're not a sacking club. That's just not the way they operate under Ashley. If you look at historically what they've done, they persevered with McLaren for way too long. They persevered for John Carver they waited for McLaren far too long. They persevered with Alan Pardew way beyond the point that he'd lost the crowd, lost fans. And, you know, Pardew brought it back a bit, but his relationship with the fans was gone. So, yeah. And we're talking about a time when there aren't fans casting judgment in the stadium at the moment. And they just won't do it. They will not do it. So people can have this debate themselves, and that's fine. But I mean, even if you go back to Rafa, they didn't blink when Newcastle were starting seasons really, really badly. I think the only time that they would seek to change it would be if Ashley's investment is in jeopardy. And you can also argue that he hasn't acted at those points in the past either, or if he has, it's been sort of too late. I think it's slightly different this season because of the takeover, because of the fact he is desperate to get out, and we've had that sort of narrative around the club for so long. Maybe that would focus minds a little bit, but if you know, it's just not on the agenda for the foreseeable future.
It's worth bringing up, actually, as well, talking about the ownership of the club. We all three of us were involved in another Athletic podcast, which was a three-part podcast documentary called Beyond the Headline. It was hosted by Adam Leventhal, and it was a fantastic look back at the Mike Ashley era. We were all involved. Chris, how did you find that? I thought it was a great listen. I listened to it all in one go yesterday, and I thought it was brilliant.
I mean, I'd say great listen, but I wouldn't refer to it as fantastic as you did. Not in terms of all of the coverage behind it was and the way it's put together by Muddy Knees Media, but listening to to 13 years of Mike Ashley again wasn't something I'd describe as fantastic.
No, it was depressing. It was a fantastic product, put it that way. That's
yes. Oh no, it really did sound brilliant. I mean, because I've had people messaging me saying, "Oh, brilliant, well done." It's like, well, I got called and interviewed for like 45 minutes. That was my contribution. I didn't put together the vast majority of it. It's all of the team at Muddy Knees Media, and then obviously Adam Leventhal, who does the commentary over the top. So yeah, I think it's brilliant. I'd definitely recommend a listen.
Absolutely. And if you want to listen to that, you can search Beyond the Headline on your usual podcast platform, and you should find that in there. You can also find one of the episodes on the Pod on the Tyne feed as well. If you're not sure about that, you want to have a little check it out first and see how it sounds, and you can listen to that on there. George, how did you find that as well? How did you find the Beyond the Headline doc? Did you enjoy doing it?
Well, same with Chris. No, I didn't enjoy doing it at all, because it feels like all I do is talk about how shit Newcastle are. So,
But we do that every week, though.
Well, exactly, yeah. So it was more. So, no, I didn't enjoy it in the slightest. However, I mean, I'm certainly interested to know what Newcastle fans thought of this, and obviously we're a Newcastle pod, so that's who's going to be listening to us talk about it. But I hope that it'll be sort of more valuable in some ways to a non-Newcastle audience, because we know what's happened over the last 13 years and more. We're probably sick of explaining it, but it sometimes feels that people outside the region don't necessarily listen. This was a podcast that hopefully everybody will be listening to, and if it does nothing else, I hope it sort of means that there might be a little bit more sort of empathy from others to what it's like to be around Newcastle over the past decade.
And if you want to check out any of the other content on theathletic.com at the minute as well, you can sign up with theathletic.com/NewcastlePod, and you pay just £1 a month for all that lovely content, the best football writing in the business, and all the wonderful podcasts and everything else that goes with it. Get yourself on theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. And as we're talking about the ownership and things like that going forward, let's have a couple of questions on that. Mark Jones has asked, what's the sudden problem with talking about the takeover? Mark Jones, I don't know. And what's happening with the takeover? George, can you give us an update? Is there anything there?
Well, hi, Mark. Thank you. I'm not sure what you mean by problem with talking about the takeover. I mean, I don't have any problem talking about it. It's just that there isn't really much to talk about at the moment. And we have talked about it a lot. We've had two sort of huge things. There was the first bid, which was accepted and then got stuck with the Premier League, as we all know about, and that then broke down. There was then this takeover Mark II, which was sort of the kind of political involvement that involved lots of ferrying between the Premier League and the buyers and the sellers. Close contact between Ashley and Amanda Staveley's group again, and that feeling that they'd got to a point where, if not answered the Premier League's questions, then proved that the things that the Premier League wanted to have happen or be found out, that they had good legal arguments, or that they'd received assurances from the Saudi state. Now, there was then that disagreement, dispute. It didn't happen. Ashley, through Newcastle, released that statement. Premier League then released a statement, and then the latest thing is Mike Ashley hiring or taking on lawyers to look at the case. That's where we're at. I mean, that is where we're at. So if the first part of it was just the takeover, you know, takeover version one, which the second part of it was political, and that didn't work, and now the third part is legal. And so that is where things stand. It's now reached a legal element. Has Staveley and the group disappeared, gone away forever? No, they're still very much on the scene, and they're part of what's happening at the moment. Is anything happening on a daily basis? No, it's just not like that. So if there is going to be any sort of resolution, we're talking weeks, weeks, weeks. And so are we making a point of not talking about it? No, we're not doing that on purpose. It's just that there's nothing to say. So at some point, the legal machinations have to take a step further, take a step closer. I think I said at the time, the idea at this point, from what I've been told, is that they want to force the Premier League to make a decision. So at the moment, we're still stuck in this position where the Premier League are saying, you haven't done what we asked you to do, and therefore the takeover can't progress any further. Now, that is not an official rejection. However, it effectively means the same thing. It means that the takeover can't go ahead as things stand. What the buyers want to do, what Ashley wants to happen, is for a decision to be given, for the takeover to be rejected. It's because if the takeover is then rejected officially, they can appeal it, and they think they can win it on appeal. But as I say, that is a considerable way down the line. There's no point just saying the same thing over and over and over and over again. So thanks for the question, but we're not avoiding it, are we? No.
Okay, moving on. We're going to start to wind things up here. We've got a few more little silly questions to get through before we finish. Thanks a lot, everyone who has got involved today as well and who's sent questions in. And thank you to everyone who's listening as well. Gemma Lawson has asked, and this is a really important question. We need to get this in. What is the best crumpet topping in your opinion, George?
Fabian Shaw.
Excellent. Yeah, Chris? Sausage.
I mean, sausage is brilliant on anything, but crumpet, I think, and this is a thing that my grandma always has on Christmas. We always have crumpets and pikelets and croissants at Christmas morning, and she always has patty out, and patty on a crumpet is delicious.
Oh, get away with yourself.
Patty on a crumpet.
Absolute patty on a crumpet. No.
Yes.
Patty on a croissant.
Dirty.
Patty on a croissant.
You don't put patty on the croissant. You put it on the crumpet.
Fucking hell, Chris.
No, it's just, I'm sorry, the correct answer is just butter anyway. Melted
Chris,
butter.
Chris, I'm sorry,
honey's
but
nice
with,
and a crumpet as well.
With the greatest respect to your family tradition, that is bullshit.
Chris, you can't put meat on absolutely everything. Yet you have to understand I do try
my very best.
As much
to do
as you
that,
want
so.
To, Chris, for God's sake, stop you, putting meat on things.
When
you,
when you get up in the morning, do you shower in mint?
Oh.
Unbelievable.
Oh, God almighty. If Chris is on sausages, which he always is, and Steve Bruce is on bacon, what are you both on, Taylor and George? My guess is Taylor for eggs and George for beans. Let the listeners know. Obviously, the important questions are getting answered here. So, George, if Chris is on sausage and Bruce is on bacon, what are you on? I mean, you're a Gosforth lad, aren't you? So
well, I think
some sort of fucking avocado on toast, I'd imagine, if it was you.
I think Stephen's on drugs asking this question. No, I don't. I wouldn't be on beans. I don't know why. Why would you think I was on beans? I'm sort of interested in that. No, I don't really think.
Is it because you're very gaseous? Is that what it is?
Well, I don't think beans really have a place on. No, I don't. I'm
what?
Sorry.
Hush your dirty mouth. Honestly.
No, if I'm having this,
beans
I would
are
like.
Wonderful.
No, I don't really see the. No, I don't like them. What
Come
I
on,
want
then.
Is, it's not I don't like them, I do like them. Beans on toast, fine. I just don't want them on a breakfast. I think that's kind of wrong. I don't think potatoes should be on a breakfast either. I mean, I know they're not always, but I want fried eggs, soft in the middle, crispy around the outside. I want very crisp bacon. I want a grilled tomato.
No.
Maybe that's it. That maybe a sausage. Well,
that grilled
maybe
tomato
a bit of sausage.
Will go in the fucking bin
yeah,
for me.
Where's part of a breakfast?
No, that takes the... Hang on, I haven't finished yet. I don't
oh,
know.
Sorry.
I don't know. Maybe I'll be black pudding.
Oh, you bastard. That's what I was going to say. Oh, Jesus, right, that spoiled that. Anyway, okay, and on a similar theme, if Steve Bruce were a kind of sausage, what kind of sausage would he be? Just
monster?
A really sort of...
What monster have we created with this sausage?
Eric Brown, a very straightforward pork sausage, I would say. Probably Asda, Smart Price, something like that.
I mean, I think it would be pure meat, whatever it was.
Pure meat?
I'm not sure if
be
it's
no
beef.
No rusk in there, would there?
No, I'm not sure if it's pork, if it's beef. I'm not entirely sure, but it's definitely 100% meat.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up. We've talked enough shit. Thanks very much, everybody, for listening and everyone for getting involved and sending the questions. Make sure you get on theathletic.com/Newcastle pod and check out the Beyond the Headline podcast as well that we were all involved in. Just £1 a month at the moment. Sign up for a subscription to The Athletic and read all of that wonderful, wonderful content. Thank you, George and Chris, yet again for answering some of those utterly ridiculous questions. Thanks a lot, lads.
Cheers, Taylor.
Lovely stuff.
Stay safe, everyone.
Yes, absolutely. Stay safe. Look after yourselves. Wear your masks. Don't be a dick. We'll be back very, very soon. Speak to you in a little while. Bye-bye.